Hello and welcome to the Health Innovation Podcast. This is one of a series of conversations recorded at the NHS Confed Expo event 2023 with me, Caroline Kenyon. In this episode, we hear how AHSNs are having an impact on reducing health inequalities. First, we hear why a health inequalities focus is essential for all innovations, from AHSN Network Vice Chair Richard Stubbs.
It's really important as the AHSN Network that when we think about the impact we have, we think about all our innovation through the lens of healthcare inequalities. We could really try and hit the target and miss the point if we don't look to support the communities that need the most support from us. And actually, there's an even bigger risk, which is that as we see the transformation of healthcare through digital, through other types of technologies that are starting to come to the fore, there's a risk that we can exacerbate rather than reduce health inequalities unless we absolutely bake in the impact on health inequalities that our work will have and seek to support pathway changes that actually reduce healthcare inequalities. We know as an AHSN network that it's very possible to deploy high volumes of technologies, of innovations, but to the people who need it the least. And so we have to cross-reference the opportunity that innovation brings with the areas of highest deprivation, because that's where we can make the most impact. And we've got a huge and growing number of case studies of how we've started to think deeply, not just about the change itself, but about where that change needs to be felt. And it's about working with our communities. And actually, one of the biggest things that I found in my journey around how innovation and health inequalities blend together is it starts with trust. We saw it in the pandemic that some of our most deprived communities are the ones least likely to accept services and particularly to accept change. If we don't have the trust of our communities from the outset, then we're not going to be able to take them on that change. And despite our best efforts, the impact that we're trying to have will not be felt by the communities near the most. So that's why, as an AHSN network, health inequalities is the golden thread through everything we do. And that's why we're trying to really make sure that innovation gets to those communities who need our help the most.
Do you have any top tips for innovators who want to work with the HSNs to get their innovations into the NHS? What would you say to them?
I think what I would say and do say to all innovators thinking about getting innovation into the NHS is they've got to come at it from where the NHS has placed its priorities. And I can't think of a stronger flag, a stake in the ground that the NHS has placed over the last 2 to 3 years, particularly since 2020, other than health inequalities. So innovators have to think really deeply, even if they haven't started from a health inequalities impact perspective, they've got to think about how that innovation is designed to tackle health inequalities. And I would actually add, if they can't find the benefit, then they perhaps need to think again. And they need to think about how they've really done the work in terms of public and patient engagement, in terms of really thinking deeply about the communities who need their help the most. But there's no point giving the NHS solutions that don't seemingly address the challenges and the priorities where the NHS needs. So think about health inequalities. Think about other things as well, such as net zero. But health inequalities, for me, has to be part of the value proposition that an innovator brings to the table when he's meeting our NHS colleagues.
The AHSNs have got a very strong focus on reducing health inequalities through the innovations they're supporting. And with me are three people who are doing that very successfully in different areas. And could start off with some introductions, please.
Hi, I'm Laura Boyd, Director of Implementation for Cardiovascular Health at UCL Partners.
Hi, I'm Cathy McCabe. I'm an evaluation researcher at the Southwest Academic Health Science Network.
And I'm Sally Irwin, a project manager at the Health Innovation Network, which is the AHSN for South London.
Laura Boyd, your particular project targeting health inequalities is about blood pressure optimisation. Why did you choose that particular programme?
So cardiovascular disease, heart attacks and strokes, it causes around 27% of all deaths across the UK. It disproportionately affects people from deprived areas of the country. It disproportionately affects men, older people, people with learning difficulties, serious mental illness, but also your ethnicity will affect how you're affected by it. So we know Black, African and Caribbean and people from Asian backgrounds are more likely to be affected by cardiovascular disease. But CVD is highly preventable, both through lifestyle interventions, but also through optimally treating people for blood pressure. And that's one reason the HSN network selected a blood pressure optimization program as its national program last year.
And how does that work? How are you managing to optimize the treatment of blood pressure locally and then nationally, I understand?
So the programme supports all 15 AHSNs to support their local systems to implement the UCL Partners Proactive Care Frameworks. Now this is a framework to support systems to search and stratify for patients already on the healthcare register by need. So those people whose last BP reading is high or abnormal, or there hasn't been one for a certain amount of time, and who have a certain number of other clinical characteristics will be prioritised through that search and stratification. But we know just identifying people isn't enough. We need to support systems to build the capacity and time to be able to manage patients optimally. So the frameworks provide that. They provide a way to utilise the breadth of the primary care workforce, so we're not just adding pressure to the GP, to support patients, to offer wider lifestyle interventions, and to help relieve that pressure on primary care. And they're also underpinned by the fantastic digital and online resources through the likes of the British Heart Foundation, the Stroke Association, the NHS and so on, to really support our primary care colleagues be able to effectively manage people with blood pressure. The second part of the programme really targeted health inequalities, which means we gave each HSN the data so that they knew which practices in their region both had the poorest treated-to-target rates for blood pressure, but also were in the most deprived areas. So that really provided a mechanism for prioritising which practices to start implementation of the frameworks with.
So using data to target health inequalities specifically, and what impact has the programme had?
So we've only been going for a year, but I'm really delighted to say that just under half of all primary care networks, 607 in total, are now using the frameworks. Now there's a plethora of initiatives underway in cardiovascular disease, but we do know that those practices who had the lowest rates of treating people to target have made the most significant improvements over the last year. And while we can't just put it down to this program, I think it's a fantastic indicator that focused effort can drive change.
Focused effort and very much working collaboratively, as you say, with different organisations.
Exactly. So the frameworks are not designed to be a blueprint. They're designed to be a basis from which you can plan your care using a structured and systematic approach. And we've seen great examples from the different HSNs working with their local systems, bringing in community pharmacists, working with local voluntary groups to build a programme that works for that local community. So we know, for example, Eastern HSN took it a step further. They ran a huge patient engagement questionnaire to really understand local people's attitudes to hypertension so that they could build a compelling and appropriate programme around that.
You sound very pleased and proud of the work that you've done.
I think it's a testament to all 15 HSNs. Everyone has put a huge amount of energy and enthusiasm and work in over the year, and I think that speaks both to the commitment of, you know, colleagues across the HSN network, but also the fact that this is such a national challenge, isn't it, cardiovascular disease, and the impact it has on communities, from particularly more deprived communities. So there's a compelling need with a great workforce working together to do this.
It's a great story. Thank you, Laura. Cathy McCabe from Southwest HSN. Your work has been part of a national programme specifically to target health inequalities. Can you tell us a little about that first?
So that's correct. My work was funded through the NHS Insights Prioritisation Programme, which was set up in order to realise the insights from the pandemic, really, you know, where there have been interesting service innovations, etc., as a result of the pandemic. What can we learn from them? So I'm in the Southwest, as you said, and we had to collaborate with our local applied research collaborative, which is called PenARC, on this project. We actually went through a lengthy process to select the most appropriate project for the NIP, and in the end we chose this project in Cornwall, the Community Assessment and Treatment Units, of which there are three in Cornwall. And what they do is they divert frail elderly people with urgent care needs patients that can't be held in the community but don't need to go to ED to community hospitals where they can be treated ideally really rapidly and go home. So they spend as little time as possible in hospital, which is a really key thing for this particular patient group, and they get all the treatment they need and they're back to where they're comfortable and happy. So we know for this patient group that going into hospital for any length of time, particularly longer lengths of time, is actually really bad for their health. They decondition physically and mentally. It's very challenging for people in this patient group. So if you can spend as short a time as possible, closer to home ideally, you'll be very happy.
Isn't this a little bit like going back in time? Isn't that what community hospitals were originally designed to do?
That's really interesting you say that. In a way, that's true, but what they're doing down in Cornwall is allowing for more higher acuity to be treated in the community. So higher and higher acuity patients, they've brought into those community hospitals increased point of care testing, x-rays, one of them has a CT scanner, and so they're really pulling that that capability, that expertise into the community. The staff in these units are working in a really interesting way. They're working in multidisciplinary teams, and they're really focused on rapid clinical decision making. Got some very interesting and forward thinking ward managers and GPs who are very focused on how quickly can we get our patients out, how can we allow them to go back into the community. It's a kind of new way of thinking in a way. Some of the nursing staff would definitely say, in terms of allowing patients to go home maybe sometimes sooner than would traditionally be liked, but understanding that risk can be held in the community in a different way, and understanding that patients want to be at home, patients don't want to be in hospital, and they will recover more quickly at home, they'll feel happier. So at the same time in Cornwall, and I think this is true nationally, there is a drive to hold more acuity in the community in general, and for primary care to hold more acuity. And Cornwall really sees the CATUs as a safety net for allowing that to happen. It means that if you're in primary care or you're a nurse in the community and you've got someone who's getting more unwell, you've tried to treat them there, you don't have to use the ED. You can use a CATU for this patient group. So you're not putting more pressure on the ED. Your patients aren't going somewhere that they don't like to go. And you're working more closely in your place, which I think is beneficial all round, and we know that the staff like working there too.
So great feedback from patients and from staff.
Absolutely, great feedback from patients and from staff. What one piece of work we did was to compare staff satisfaction on the CATUs with the NHS survey for across Cornwall. So we looked at the numbers across Cornwall, and we could see that staff are more satisfied working there. They particularly like how they're being upskilled and trained on the job, and they like working with other professions in different ways. And also through our interviews, we found the same thing too. People are really excited to work with higher acuity patients.
Great, thank you so much, Cathy. And Sally Irwin, Project Manager for Diabetes at the Health Innovation Network in South London. Tell us what you've been working on.
So I have also been working on an NHS Insights prioritisation programme, and in South London our chosen project was healthy eating and active lifestyles for diabetes, otherwise known as HEAL-D, which is a culturally tailored type 2 diabetes programme for adults of African and Caribbean heritage.
Why did you choose that one?
HEAL-D is a locally developed programme, and it was developed to address the inequalities in structured education, attendance and outcomes among African and Caribbean adults. And it's a programme that we support as an AHSN, and we are able to provide the project management support to assess the feasibility and acceptability of HEAL-D online and to explore the potential scale of the programme as well.
Tell us what it is exactly. Is it about lifestyle? Is it healthy eating? Is it education on how to manage diabetes? And what's it look like?
So HEAL-D is a 7-week programme. There's a face-to-face version and also an online version, which is delivered through video conferencing technology. It's 7 sessions, as I say, and it combines interactive diet and lifestyle advice with participatory physical activity and also cooking workshops. And that's all underpinned by an ethos of sort of inclusion and peer support and behaviour change theory as well.
And at ConFed Expo, you showed us photographs of very happy people cooking amazing food. So it's bringing people together. What kind of feedback are you getting from those taking part?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the strengths of HEALD is that it was co-designed. So that's where some of those photographs that you mentioned came from. We had a really strong lived experience involvement element through our project, as we wanted to continue the ethos of that co-design development. And the feedback that we receive from participants who go through the program is really positive. They find the content relatable, they enjoy the sessions, and they've told us that they really enjoy the peer support and the group structure of the program as well.
What lessons did you learn through co-designing this program, targeting a particular community for managing diabetes?
What lessons did we learn? Lots of lessons. I mean, it's vital insights and experience that we would otherwise not know. We can't make any assumptions, so it's really important to involve people that the service is for in the design of the service.
And have you got evidence of impact of how the program has helped people to improve management of the diabetes?
So through the most recent project that we did, we as part of the evaluation, we evaluated the service. Some of the results are that all participants agreed or strongly agreed that as a result of HEALD Online, that they'd learned practical skills and they feel more motivated and supported to manage their diabetes. And 100% of attendees would recommend HEALD to their friends and family. And in terms of sort of health outcomes, actually 83% of the participants reported weight loss, and also people reported we use a paid, or the program uses a paid 5 questionnaire to assess diabetes distress, and that for patients reporting diabetes distress before the program was at 61%, and after the program it was at 17%. So some really positive outcomes coming through the program.
Great. And how does that make you feel?
It's a fantastic program, and I would recommend that people have a look at the HEALD website, where there's some fantastic resources and some great videos as well to have a look at.
Great. Inspirational stories from all three. Finally, do you have any top tips for anybody else who's trying to develop a program, in particular wanting to target health inequalities? Any top tips?
Probably two top tips. One is just picking up on Sally's point around that co-design. We just got asked a question in the panel we did, didn't we, around how do we ensure that we're really centering on the patient, on the individual, and what matters to them. And I think only through co-design can we do that. And if we do that right, we should be able to affect change, because we're designing services around the individual. The second is the data. How do we know where to target? How do we know where to start? And only the data and a kind of a logical, systematic approach can help with that. So, yeah, my two things. Understand where we need to prioritise and then co-design.
I'd like to build on that. I agree with everything you said, but it's really getting to know your people. It's getting to know your local area or region. So obviously, HSNs work regionally. Like, really understanding who's living there, really understanding their needs, population health level and a community level. And the only way you do that is look at the data, as you say, Laura, and get to know those communities. And then there's so much insight there. There's so much rich information there. That's my tip.
Absolutely, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to repeat what Laura and Kathy have said. Embedding lived experience involvement in any project that you do from the start, making sure it's within that application and project planning phase, and making sure that it begins early through the project, and just ensuring that there's the appropriate resource and time available to do it well and to do it meaningfully.
Can I add something to that? Absolutely agree with you. And I think it's also understanding that a project, it shouldn't just be extractive. You aren't just going to take and do what you need to do for your research or your evaluation, but like, what can you do for people? What will it give back to people? What will it? What's the benefit to them to being involved? Sometimes just involvement is a really amazing benefit, because people learn so much, but thinking about how can it be a two-way street, I think, is really important.
Such a lot to think about, but great to hear from you all. Great lessons for everybody, but hopefully where you lead, others will follow. So well done, and thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank Thank you, Sally Irwin, Laura Boyd, Kathy McCabe and Richard Stubbs. To find out more about the AHSN Network's focus on health inequalities and support for innovators, check out the links on the podcast page. Thank you for listening.